For much of the history of Africville, access to quality education has been a constant battle. In Africville, as with many other Africadian communities, education determined employment.
The type of work that the education that the majority of people received prepared them for menial labor jobs. They were seen as having no potential in terms of receiving or achieving an education, and it affected naturally it affected the lives of a lot of people. Now earlier on in Africville, where we had our one room school, economics determined the education. Like a lot of the young men only went to school to a certain grade because they had to get out and help the family to earn an income to subsidize the family. So education, my generation of Africanians were the first generation to achieve high school in any significant numbers. Before that, very few people from Africa got to high school, either through reasons of economics or through reasons of discrimination within the school system itself.
It was something because in North Preston, you always go, in my time, you always go to school in grade 8.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in grade 8 when I was in grade 12.
Yeah.
I mean, at 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I left there at 15 because there was nothing there to go to work. And I got in Mr. Professor Ball in Dartmouth, and he taught me a lot. And then I went to different schools. The only time I was stationed in Cambodian on the Army, I went to night school. And then, in fact, I went back to school when I retired.
Mm-hmm.
When I lived in Africa, like I said, I came out of the Army from there and went on the railroad.
Yeah. So the men, we'll start with the men, for example, at that time. What kind of work were the men from Africa?
Well, a lot of just work on the waterfront.
Yeah.
Was mostly all waterfront. Some of them had jobs like with National Defense and the Harbor Board. But most of them were on the waterfront.
Yeah. So would they be?
And, some on the railroad. There was one, two, three. There's about five on the railroad.
Mm-hmm. At different porters, stewards, and
yeah.
Different stages.
It was all porters except myself. I became a conductor. I trained my courses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. It was two. Another fellow beside me saw.
Mm-hmm. What about the women?
Well, a lot of the women were housework, and for the younger one, they worked in office, but mostly all the women were all that did housework.
Mm-hmm.
Domestic work, stuff like that.
Okay.
Regardless of how we may feel as individuals, with regards to the city's intentions, to live in Africville in the period prior to relocation must have been a frustrating experience.
And even before they talked about relocating, they put everything in there. They put dump in there, and there was a slaughterhouse in there, and there was a defective disease hospital up above the hill there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was, they did everything to discourage the people, right?
You know.
Well, it was tough. We tried. I mean, people ran off the city for water, paved roads, and sewer and stuff like that, but the city had plans from way back.
While it may be true that the members of city staff approached the Africville relocation with honorable intentions, the process by which relocation was carried out seemed less than honorable.
You promise so much, eh? This is the way they did a sneaky thing. They came in, they said, okay, we'll give you so much now. We revalued the property down the road and give you so much. And unemployment, education, this is all the promises and stuff that they made. Eh?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's softening the people up, I call it.
Yeah.
We've got to look at it in context and remember that when the question of relocation first surfaced, there were... Guy Ahern was the MLA for the area, and the alderman for the area found out about that they were considering relocating the people of Africville. They called a meeting in the church for the people of Africville to discuss it. A meeting that was, the church was overflowing. It was very well attended. And to a person, the people of Africville rejected relocation. They said, no, we do not want to relocate. If you want to do something, come in and help us develop our community. But no, we do not want to move. And after that meeting, it was the subject was dropped for a period of time. And the next time around, and through the whole approach on relocation, the establishment, the city, used the approach of dealing with people on an individual basis. So that collective wishes of the people was not dealt with anymore. It was, I'll deal with you, and we'll work out a deal. Then I'll go over and work out a deal with him, and I'll use you as an example and say, well, you know, he's gone and everyone's going, and the divide and conquer technique came in. And I'm sure that it came in strictly because of the determination of the people when brought together as a group to say no to relocation. And, you know, but I mean, like, you have a group of people that for over 100 years has been assailed and attacked and neglected and forgotten by an establishment who now is coming in terms of force and the whole government talking about you've got to move, and if you don't move, well, we'll take your house anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, I say it was disaster because some of the houses that they put the people in after they moved, city houses, were worse than the houses that they had. Some of the people had good homes out there, including myself. And some of the houses that they put people in was even condemned in the city, mm-hmm. You know. So then some people bought homes and they just couldn't afford to keep them. Mortgages, people never used to mortgages or anything like
that. Now, there was supposed to be some sort of an agreement with the people who were moving out that, you know, they would get assistance with their mortgages?
Oh, that. Yeah. That never happened.
In approaching the relocation at the level of individuals, and by relying too heavily on the advice of outsiders, the city of Halifax failed to recognize the importance of community amongst Africvillians. Those who succeeded in bridging the gap between the rural and urban experience did so without the anticipated guidance or support of the municipal government.
People say, well, you know, like you've been able to do pretty well in life. You've been able to achieve certain things in your life, and don't you think that maybe... No. What I've been able to achieve in my life is far less than what I would have been able to achieve if I was in my own community. The stealing of the heritage of my children would not have occurred with relocation. My children would have grew up in Africville on their historic land site with all the ties to their history and their ancestry that was present there. They would have grown up in a community with a sense of community of knowing who they are and why they are here and how they got here. You know, any material gains that individuals from Africville might have gotten after relocation probably would have been tripled, quadrupled, if still in Africville, because of the potential of the land that we were living on the Bedford Basin, on prime waterfront on the Bedford Basin, prime industrial land, prime residential land. Do you think that today, if I was living in Africville would still be without water and sewer? Do you think that if I was living in Africville today that there wouldn't be industrial development in Africville, either very small on the waterfront? Do you think that there wouldn't be senior citizen housing in Africville? Do you think that there wouldn't be recreation facilities in Africville? I don't think so.
To this day, the spirit of Africville does indeed live on. Although the descendants of former residents can now read about the community or watch the Africville documentary produced by Sylvia Hamilton, the most important medium for the Africville story continues to be the people. Sean Mantley.
About life in the community first through my grandmother, because she grew up there, and my mother. But as far as the relocation story, I learned about that like through books and stuff like that. But it was definitely the pre-relocation story that I heard, the first-hand story about how it was, how people were independent, how they had their own houses, how they got water from the wells. So a lot of that I learned firsthand.
What do you tell your children about Africville?
I tell them basically the history of Africville. I tell them how our people got there, who their family is, how our people lived in Africville. I tell them the important things about Africville, how important the church was in our community, about the sense of community. And I, you know, like I like to compare it to where we live now and say, you know, like, when we lived in Africville, you know, you knew everybody. And I asked them, do you know everybody in your neighborhood? And they, you know, they say, well, no, we don't know everybody. We know our immediate neighbors, but we don't know. I said, well, in Africville, we knew everybody. We knew everybody in every house, and we knew who they were and who their family was and who everybody was related to. I said, you've got cousins, you know, and I say to them, you've got cousins now that you don't even know. I said, that never, ever happened in Africville. The only time that happened in Africville is if somebody moved away. But you did know of them. You knew who they were, you know, and they came home, back home to Africa and brought their family back. You know, you didn't know them, like, growing up with them, but you knew who they were. And you know, I tell them about things like that and try to get across to them the importance of those things, those roots, those ties of who you are. Always know who you are and where you're from, you know, because it's important. Because there's, you know, a lot of people out there who don't have a clue of any of those kinds of ties of who they are or anything. So, you know, I tell them about that, and I tell them about what happened to Africa, you know, and why it's important to understand why it happened. And all the time, you know, getting across the importance of them themselves getting educated.
I still have to learn more, and, you know, because, again, I don't have the same passion as my mom and my grandmother, because they grew up there. You know, I'm a descendant, and they told me, but it's still, it's not the same as being there and actually watching your community being destroyed. So, you know, I have to get more passion. That means I have to go do more research. I have to go educate myself in order to educate my children. So, you know, once I fully educate myself and I have more facts and I understand the situation more, because a lot of, like I said, a lot of the stuff, the facts I got that weren't from my mom, I got from books. So, and that's other people's interpretation. So I think basically people have to respect the elders and listen to elders, because the elders, like I said, have a lot to offer. So once I got that, I would go and then educate, sit down my children and say, okay, this community, Africville, this is where your grandmother grew up, this is where your great grandmother, and you know, that way when they grow up, they're gonna have the same passion as my grandmother and my mom do. So they're gonna feel proud to be descendants of Africville.
Much of them lived there, you know. I mean, they lived there. They know what happened. Everything is explained to them. They know, you know. but until you can tell them what happened back, you know, back before their time, you know, history and stuff like that. But they, and I got tapes and stuff like that, you know, of the Africville and the relocation, stuff like that.
What about your grandchildren?
My grandchildren, well, we explain that to them. And then they see tapes. Like I said, I got tapes of tapes of them when they tore the Africville down. I got tapes of that and tapes of Africville and stuff. And then there's a book out that the, you know, you read the book, did you? Yeah. Well, that book will show you the difference in the home than what they show on TV.
Very much so.
They went on TV, when they did those tapes on TV, to say they made it look bad. You know, but the book tells the true story.
Following the relocation, 95% of the relocatees felt as though the city benefited the most from relocation. To date, former residents and their supporters continue to push for just compensation. Though opinions may vary as to what just compensation entails and who is deserving of this compensation, there is little disagreement amongst advocates for a new deal that the city of Halifax continues to shirk its responsibilities with regards to the ill-advised and ill-conceived destruction of this once idyllic Africadian community. For at least 120 years, the community of Africville existed on the shores of the Bedford Basin. Undoubtedly, the city's discriminatory practices substantially contributed to the slumification of the community. The city's refusal to provide residents with basic services ultimately robbed the area of sewage, paved roads, police and fire protection, and other such benefits. Marginalized by the greater society, Africville residents proved to be socially, politically, and economically ill-equipped to resist relocation. It is difficult to believe that the city acted in the better interest of the citizens of Africville. Rather, it appears as though the city was primarily concerned with the industrial potential of the Africville lands. As indicated by Irvin Carvery and many others, the municipality has not fully utilized the properties expropriated for the construction of the A. Murray McKay Bridge. Although the city did provide limited assistance during the moving stages of relocation, it has failed to follow through on promises made in the period leading up to, during, and after relocation. The position taken by city management is an unfortunate one. It is reflective of the adversarial system, and to date has been unable to foster a cooperative relationship between the municipality and concerned Africville residents and their descendants. Rather than work with the people to try and reach an acceptable solution, city management has expended considerable financial and human resources in an effort to defend the position that it did the right thing. If nothing else, Africville stands as an undeniable symbol of the sickening ignorance and self-satisfying nature of racism in an industrial capitalist society. Only when we allow the legacy of Africville, with all of its joys and pains, to lapse from our memories, will this important chapter in the history of Africadians fail to make us stronger as individuals, communities, and ultimately, a nation. For now, it is undeniable that the spirit of Africville lives on.
A Negro poor town by the Blue Bedford Basin, where catfish jumped and ships went sailing. We live,
we live,
we love,
we love,
we work,
we work,
and we plow hard,
we plow, and raise our children black and proud.
We built our Africville and we made it home. Church on Sundays for 100 years long. No matter, matter, rats, 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 corpse, 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 the dump next door. We could have stayed for 100 years more. And I tell you,
Africville will never die.
I sing as
Africville will never die.
I knew that
Africville will never die.
Come on now,
Africville will never die.
Well, the people say these people gotta move for their own good and our good too. City planners say these people can't stay here. We need the land for a container bear. But I tell ya,
Africville will never die.
And take her every meal.
Africville will never die.
Oh, steal it away, no.
Africville will never die.
And take her every meal.
Africville will never die.
Well, they forced us out with trucks and drinks. I push down holes while holes went. Well, maybe they saw their water in the well. But we could see sunrise like nowhere else. And I tell you,
Africville will never die.
Can't steal our every deal.
Africville will never die.
Can't take it away, no.
Africville will never die.
Can't have our every deal. Cause the bulldozers can't break pride. I tell you,
history ain't stopped by lies.
Can't take our every deal.
Africville will never die.
Oh, steal it away, no.
Africville will never die.
No, can't take it away, cause
Africville has made us